Welcome to the Ausländer. So, another episode of the Ausländer. Today we are here with Anamir. Really a pleasure that you're here. Anna, it's originally from Barcelona. She lived in Brazil for a year and now it's currently living in Zurich, Switzerland. We know each other for quite a long time ago, actually. Teenager moods, let's say like this. Back in summer times, we used to go to the same summer town, let's say in the coast, something like this, in the north of Catalonia. And yeah, actually, it has been quite a long time that we haven't talked to each other. So it's also a way of catching up on what's going on in your life. So happy to
look the same that we looked when we were 18.
Yes, definitely. Or better. Talking about Brazil, I think it would be the first step. We are drinking caipirinha, so that can go hard, I think, today. But so yeah, when exactly did you end going to Brazil?
I was in Brazil in 2013 till 2014, and it was kind of an Erasmus. It was like a kind of exchange program that we had on the university, and I went there for studying, and then I came back.
Cool. So you studied architecture, so you are an architect by profession, so you went on the last course or on...
No, I think it was my fourth year, my fifth year in Barcelona. Architecture is kind of long. Yes. I did 8 years, and I think it was my fifth, I would say. And one funny thing is that because of the level of the university, I went actually to Porto Alegre. That's on the really on the south. Actually, it's closer than of Uruguay and Argentina than Rio or Sao Paulo. Okay. The people in the south are kind of look more than like what in our minds an Argentinian look like and not like a Brazilian from Rio look like.
Okay. Don't tell to the Argentinians that they look like Uruguayans, but yeah, sure.
Well, like kind of European roots. And because of the levels of the university there, I did their last year. But then when I came back to Barcelona, I had to do 2 years more to catch the level.
Okay, crazy. So they consider a more basic level in there just because they like continue afterwards, like they do masters or some kind of stuff, or it's a different kind of university system directly?
Yeah, I think it's kind of different. I think the architecture is there just 4 years, I would say. I don't remember. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. Maybe I have to say where I studied in Barcelona, we really have like a name, like studying architecture in Barcelona. It's like a thing. Mm-hmm. And I think I'm not sure if it still is, but it was one of the best universities in Europa. So I would say like they just compare themselves to other universities and they put themselves at the best. And
cool.
Yeah.
Nice. So you said you were in Porto Alegre. Okay, that's the south of Brazil. How was the day life in there? So I mean, we know the exchanges and we heard from a lot of Erasmus people like party like crazy and not studying at all, like was like kind that of. Yeah.
Kind of. it was really, really, really nice. I would say I was a year there, and at the beginning, it was really, really nice. It was kind of this, like student life, partying hard, not doing so much, just traveling a lot. I did travel a lot. And at the end of it, I kind of get a little bit of disappointment, because I have to say, when I decided to go to Brazil, I was expecting this Erasmus life, but I wasn't expecting to, like, to discover a country, like, to, I don't know how to say, to, I've always lived and I was raised in Barcelona, and for me, Barcelona was the wall. And then one day I was there and everything was so different and people were so different that it kind of blew my mind. Oh my God, the world is bigger and there are a lot of different things. And I think I kind of, at the end, I was a little bit disappointed how the things works in Brazil. And years after the exchange, I got like this bittersweet feeling about Brazil. I loved the country, but I also hated a little bit. And I have like diverse feelings about it.
Have you ever went back to Brazil or?
No, no. And actually, funny story, I couldn't, because I did something.
Alert police.
Nothing bad. The story was that I applied for a 13-month visa, and they gave it to me. But then at the end, you cannot have a 13-month visa. You, as a student, you just can have a year. Then I had to change the visa. It was a whole process. But I was really going to stay 13 months. And at the last month, I had to get out of the country and entering back as a tourist. But on the airport, I think I went to Uruguay, and on the border, they told me, no, no, you cannot do this. You have to enter back as a student and apply for a month. But this apply thing, I think they have to check your notes and look if you are enough good student to give you 1 month more of visa.
Okay.
But the like the process of it, it was 6 months. Then I said, yeah, okay, I'm going to apply for it. Bye-bye.
And you never did.
Yeah, they just told me, if you don't do that and you enter as a student again and you never apply for it, then you cannot enter the country in 5 years. Or if you come back, you have to pay a bill. I never went back. Now it's more than 5 years, so I can now return to Brazil.
Nice. You still have contact with someone over there, or just like the friends that you had were mainly like other students from other parts of the world? Like,
yeah, I did have like this Erasmus world, I would say, but yeah, I did two really, really good friends. And I speak with them, not a lot, actually, like the time change, do we say, like it's really difficult to maintain a conversation with someone that is going to sleep when you are waking up.
Yes. And
but I invite them to my wedding. They couldn't come because of corona, but they are really, really friends. I would say if I ever come back, I will have there like a place to stay, because at least two of them.
that's really cool. I mean, it's more than 5 years and you're still keeping the contact with something. It's something that it's not easy, especially when you go in this kind of student exchange, you kind of end losing contact with people somehow. But that's really cool.
I would say like, if you are doing an Erasmus, I don't know, in Italy or in Germany, I don't know, where people are super used to know people from other countries. But in Porto Alegre, I was a weirdo. I mean, there's no tourism there. Maybe if there is, it's people from Brazil or maybe Argentinians, and they have a lot of Argentinians there, but they never saw, like, I was really going to parties and meeting people, and then, where are you from? Because, I cannot speak Portuguese. I could speak Portuguese, but you could notice that I was not from there. And then when I would say, I come from Barcelona, people were like, that's a joke. It cannot happen. And I was like, I do come from Barcelona, believe me.
That's crazy.
It was, for them, it was really, really strange. And they are not so used. I would say in our university, I had like a colleague also coming from with me from Barcelona, and we were the only ones. We were they looked at us like we opened the door and say, "Hi, we're looking for Urbanism 3. Is it here?" And they were looking at us like, "Whoa, who are these people? What are they doing here?" They never wanted to work with us. That was actually a pity, because I think like kind of making an exchange makes a lot of sense if you can work with these people. But they were a little bit, I would say, afraid of us. And I was always working with my colleague from Barcelona, because they never wanted to go with us in like teamworks and so on.
That's definitely a pity, and like not really smart. I mean, taking the advantage of someone, it's coming from another place, where especially with a field like architecture, where you can have influences from things that you have never heard before, or just like get references. Well, okay.
Yeah, actually, first day in urbanism, we had to read some text about Barcelona, and I was like, "Hey, can you pick me as a fair? I'm going to be good at it." But I don't know why. They were afraid. Maybe, I don't know.
Well, I mean, I suppose also like student times, you know, you are not as confident maybe with the topic and this kind of thing. So I think it's also kind of a normal thing to see, especially if your university, it's not that used to have foreigner students going there. Cool. Generically, like in the life in Brazil, because we have this kind of stigma based on Rio or like in big cities of Brazil, which has nothing to do with the rest of the life, I suppose.
No, no, I think I was also kind of thinking about this when I moved there, and I pack bikinis and things for going to the beach, and Porto Alegre has no beach at all. But and yeah, I remember I went there like on an August, and that's winter there, and it was really cold. I found a flat. I was living with two Brazilians, and my flat had like my window was broken, and nights at the beginning were really, really tough because it was really cold. I remember I was doing Skypes with my parents, and my parents were like with bikini because it was August, and I was like with the scarf. Home, like I'm fucking freezing in Brazil. What's happening?
And with all the bikinis on top, like
yeah. Trying to put bikinis as scarves.
Crazy. So yeah, you were sharing an apartment in there with two Brazilian persons.
It was also kind of difficult because of this, because they don't have much tourism, and they don't have much Tadens apartments to say. And as I understood, like a lot of people that come from the countryside, they come together, they rent a flat, because Porto Alegre is the capital of this region in the south, Rio Grande do Sul, and the universities are there. So a lot of people is coming to Porto Alegre, but they come like as a group and they live together. And these strange things. But it was difficult, but I get to live with two women. They were actually older than me, a lot older than me. They were single ladies that needed somebody to rent a room. Okay. And I ended up, I like it a lot because I could speak Portuguese. And I would say at the time, my Portuguese was really, really cool. From all the exchange students, I was the one really speaking good.
Okay.
And people was always surprised. Now I cannot anymore. I mean, I have some, but if I try to speak Portuguese, it would blow my mind. And nice, but
that's definitely an advantage, speaking the language when you are going somewhere and not needing to do extra lessons or whatever. How did you, I mean, you start studying Portuguese because you knew that you were going to Brazil, or you were studying Portuguese before because any reason, and you were studying like Portuguese from Portugal and not Portuguese from Brazil?
No. When I get the exchange, I started doing some classes with a Brazilian girl in Barcelona, and like private lessons. And I did like 2 months full, like every week. And then I went there like with a base, and then living with Brazilians there was made things nice. Actually, if you speak Spanish and I speak Spanish and Catalan, you kind of have it. I mean, it's the same.
Latin roots, no? Somehow.
Yes. Yeah. And that's a funny thing. They all can understand you because they study at the school English and Spanish, but they can understand you, but they cannot really talk Spanish because, as they told me, like they have this, how do you call this exam before you enter to the university? And yeah. There they can choose Spanish or English. And they told me that some years ago, a lot of people chose Spanish because it was easier. And then they put the Spanish exam really, really difficult. And at the end, everybody chooses English because the exam is, yeah, it's like the exam is easier than the Spanish exam. And I was there surprised because they are, okay, Brazil is huge, but they are all surrounded by Spanish-speaking countries. And when they meet you and they try to speak Spanish to you, they can, like, I remember they could say like, yeah, gracias, vale, sí. And it was like, really? That's the only thing you can say? I mean, I think I can do this in Japanese.
Well, that's, I mean, it's curious, no? It's how this works in this kind of countries. And I, for example, I was really surprised now when we moved to Athens, to Greece, and the level of English here, it's astonishing. Like people, really, really old people speaking really, really good English. And I was like, okay, what the fuck? And then just,
yeah. Don't talk to my grandmother in English. Okay.
Yeah, exactly. I was exactly thinking the same, you know, like if I say a word in English to my grandpas, they don't understand anything, of course, but because they haven't studied it at all, and how cultural things influence in this kind of things. Like here in Greece, they don't translate any films, for example. So that makes a lot of it. And I suppose these kind of small things, like putting an exam of Spanish more difficult than the English one, ends affecting a whole generation of people speaking a language or another, which is really curious.
But yeah, life in Brazil is not dancing carnival all every day.
It's only in carnival.
Yeah, carnival, it's 2 weeks or 3 weeks long, and there, yeah, then we dance a lot. But yeah, it was nice. I would say it was nice. Maybe it was, yeah, you get used to some things depending on where you are grown. And there's things you have to change, and like safety on the streets, that's really a thing. And I did get robbed. But things were like this. And I remember also when we started at the university, they have morning and evening program. Mm-hmm. And the professors were telling us not to pick the evening program because the university was on the top of a favela and you have to take the bus. Right. And if you take the bus at 10 o'clock when the classes of the evening are done, then the chances of you being robbed are higher. But I did went to the evening program.
And you only get robbed once. So, okay. You are survivor then. Actually, that was one of the things that I wanted to ask you about Brazil, because I kind of heard multiple times, and when I speak with people about Brazil, or people who has lived in Brazil or been there for a long time, they tend to say, yes, that's the big cities. If you go out of that, this kind of criminology thing, like people like robbing each other, or the favela standards disappear a little bit, and I suppose it's like absolutely everywhere, like big cities are easier to have this kind of troubles because they have more people. It was really like a thing that it was always present to you, like it arrives to a point of being scary for you at some point to go out into the streets or something like this.
I would say that there's two things. Like, one thing is like, okay, in Barcelona, you also get robbed, but you get robbed on a way that you didn't notice. I mean, a lot of people went on the metro, and then when they got home, oh, where's my phone? Nowhere.
Yeah.
But in Brazil, or I would say in South America, that's not the way to do it. The way is going in front of you, taking a knife and saying, hi, I want your phone. And for sure, that's traumatic because you remember how it happened. So that's one thing. So yes, when I get robbed, I get robbed like from the back. A guy came from my back and took me and put me something in the neck. And he told he has a knife, and I have no idea. But he was so
better not to know what he was.
And he was speaking to my ear and telling me, give me everything, give me everything. And that was the scary thing for me. And I gave him, so I remember I gave the money, but I just was keeping like my things far from him because I was thinking, oh no, you don't want to lose your ID.
Passport
and all these things. And I managed to just give the money. But what traumatized me was not being robbed, like giving some money, was the guy coming from the back. And nowadays, when somebody walks in my back next, so really, really close to me, sometimes I am a little bit scared, and I don't like that people walks like behind me. I'm like, ugh. But I think that's the way it happens. It's more violent, I would say. And another thing, it's that how cities are there. And you are walking on a street. Now I'm talking a lot of Barcelona. I could also say Zurich. But when you walk on the street, normally you have some shops, some things, people on the street. Yeah. And in Brazil, you have these huge extensions of houses with these fences, 3 meter high fences. Mm-hmm. And all, it looked like a prison. You kind of feel that the street is a prison and people are safe in their homes. And you are walking on the street. And these fences, and yeah, that kind of, it's not that you don't feel safety, but do you kind of feel that, better go home because it's not a safe, it's not a place to be.
Yeah, exactly. I suppose it's just like, you don't know. I mean, if you go into, let's say, European standard cities or even American standard cities, like you have this kind of security of if something happens, I enter to a shop, I enter to this coffee, I do something like this, I have a reaction point in there.
Yeah.
I've been in South America, Mexico, it happens the same a little bit also. Like suddenly you are in there and it's just like, shit, if something happens here, you're done, you know. I just this long roads with jungle everywhere around, and it's just like, okay, if someone now tried to do something here, good luck, you know. Like,
yeah, but I have to say that what really surprised me from Brazil is people, and people are really, really, really nice. And like as an example, they hitchhike a lot. So they call it Carona. And actually, when I met these girls in the university, after that, I never get in the bus again because they were always driving me home with their cars.
Okay.
They are always driving you everywhere you need. There's a Carona for you. So that's really, really nice. And the days that I really had to take the bus because my friends were not there, like one stop before I had to go down, I just stand up, look for a big guy and tell him, hi, I'm Anna. I'm from Barcelona. I got robbed last week. Can you please walk with me till my home? And they always said yes. It was really nice. I ended up every day talking about football and Neymar because that moment. And every time you say you come from Barcelona, the answer is Neymar or Messi at that moment, not anymore. And I made a lot of bus friends for 5 minutes, and they all said, okay, yeah, not problem. They were like really, really big guys working next to me and telling my
body warts.
Yeah. I get every day a body wart from the bus, and they are really, really nice. They understand a lot. Other thing, I was living on a street where we had like I could say a street guard, but he was a Yankee. So he was a guy that I think I never understood that, but he was all day taking drugs, but he was there, always there in this street.
It's just exactly like the parking people, like the junkies in my neighborhood who were just giving the parking spots to people, you know, like.
Yeah, that's how it was. But he was always there. And actually my flatmates told me, say always hello and bye, because you want to be friends with him. And I said, okay, I'm going to do it. And the day I got rough, I ran after it happened. I ran a lot. And when I crossed him, and he was like kind of half there, but he said, hey, are you okay? Are you really okay? Why are you running? And I was like, I'm crying. I got rough. But afterwards, I thought, okay, oh my God, the junkie knows me, and he tried to protect me also. So really nice.
Yeah. Good job. You know, this sentence of better keep the dangerous ones as friends as not an, as your name friend. Is. Yes. So yeah, cool. That's really nice. I mean, I think it's just like a kind of shock, cultural shock, I suppose. Like it was like a really, really big change. And at the end, a lot of people who went to South America, for example, putting an example in there, they end living in this kind of golden prisons that I call, where they live in this kind of apartments in these super nice neighborhoods, and they never go out of this. But it's really cool that you were like sharing a flat with Brazilian people, that you get to move with public transportation, that you did like the normal life there, because that's the real experience at the end about the country. Do you remember any crazy moment, like in terms of funny, that you were not expecting from from Brazil, that you say, okay, that was okay, what the hell?
Yeah, I don't know. It was everything was nice. Yeah, like funny. Yeah, I don't know.
It could be also like something that shocked you in a way, like, I don't know, they used to do this in that way. When I ask this question about people who's living in Germany, they always say bread. Like good thing about Germany, bread and beer. And
yeah, I remember something that I really found funny at the beginning is that in the supermarket, they had a lot of people working there. I didn't understand why you need so many people in a supermarket. And when you are paying, there's like the guy that you pay, but there's also guys putting your things in the, how do you say it?
The bags, the plastic bags. Yeah.
In the bags. Yeah, exactly. And they put the things in the bags like they think you want it. And they like, they kind of separate like hygienic products, food, no plastic is no option there. Uh-huh. And they were like kind of young guys doing it for me. And at the beginning, I felt really weird because I was also young and I don't need nobody to put my things in bags. I can do it by myself. But they have this kind of a lot of people working and expecting for you some money. And yeah, that was kind of, I remember that was kind of crazy. I remember also that what people used to drink, like on parties, caipirinha also was a thing, but they really like to mix alcohol with this pulver juice. Do you know these tanks? This yes. juice that come like in a little bag, yes. And it's like pulver.
Yeah, like the powder thingy that you mix with water, yeah, and then it
the
comes.
Powder. Yeah. Exactly. So when you went to a supermarket, next to the alcohol, like you had vodka and gin, and next to it, you would have all these powder juices.
So they really
a lot of different fruits. And you, every day you could say, okay, today I'm partying with vodka and cashew. And tomorrow I'm going to party with gin and, let's say, watermelon. And you could do like every day your magic powder alcoholic drink.
But that's That's horrible. I mean, because when you're when you're mixing alcohol with another thing, at the end you're watering the alcohol, so you make it like softer. When you're mixing powder with vodka, it's no, still 100%
vodka. There was also a little bit of water. Was water, powder, and alcohol.
Sorry, but it I was imagining putting gin and watermelon powder, and I'm flavoring the alcohol. Who cares, you know?
No. I think there was water there, but it was funny because you get to drink a lot of exotic fruits that I mean, in Barcelona, we always drink with lime.
Exotic fruits in powder, yes, sure.
Yeah, exactly. And no, but talking about fruits, I really like this. They have like little shops everywhere called lancherias where you can order a lot of juices, like really, mm-hmm. Now we are talking about real juice from real fruit.
Yeah.
And that I love because I don't drink Coke or I don't drink things soda. With gas.
Yeah.
Yeah, soda. And I really liked a lot. And I remember my first pineapple juice and I discovered that the pineapple juice we normally drink, that's not pineapple. That's not pineapple juice. That's pineapple juice flavored. But when you really make a juice from a pineapple, you get something really different.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I would say all my stories are about drinking. Oh my God. I think also like that's, I think it's a thing from the South or maybe from whole Brazil. They say they drink cerveja stupidamente gelada because they drink really, really cold beer.
That's totally fine.
Yeah.
Like what I cannot understand is the people like the Austrians drinking like warm beer. That's what drives me crazy. Like
no,
why?
But it's kind of freeze, I would say, and it always come in 75 centiliters bottles, and you share it on the table. So you go on a bar, you sit on the table, you ask for the beer, and it comes with glasses, like little glasses.
Yeah,
and then you put it on there, and it's kind of like it's really really soft. I think the hardest beer in Porto Alegre was Heineken,
which is water. Yeah,
exactly. Good. So the funny story comes in Barcelona because I was not drinking beer before going to Brazil. There I got used to drink beer because it was so cold and nice and soft. And the first day I came back, I went to a bar in Barcelona. I think I ordered like 5 Estrella Damm in a row. And after that, I got up and said, oh my God. Oh, shit.
Mama Estrella is coming.
Yeah. I remember that day saying, oh no, I cannot drink beer as I was doing in Brazil. Oh, shit.
You know, the funny thing, actually, that's something that they also do here. Like they have beer, it's not frozen, it's extremely cold also. And in Greece they also do that. They traditionally I order or someone orders a beer and they bring you small glasses to share.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
I came from Germany to Greece and I was like the first day were like, yeah,
that's,
you're
getting that's for sure. That's not just yes, for me.
Exactly, but it was not even a 75 centiliters, it was just half liter, and I was like, okay, that's my beer. What the hell are you doing, you know?
What are you doing with these glasses around my beer?
Exactly. Why there is so many glasses for my beer?
Yeah. So half a liter is the normal thing also here in Zurich.
Yeah. Sure. Cool. I think so after the program, and you already said that the visa were like 12, 13 months, let's say like this. And you came back to Barcelona.
Yeah.
You finished your studies mm-hmm. in Barcelona. You start working in Barcelona, actually, as far as I remember.
Yeah. Yes.
And
but I just worked 9 months, 8 months, I said, and then I moved to Zurich.
Okay. So why the movement to Zurich? Like, you were 9 months in Barcelona and then you decided to move to Zurich out of nowhere, like job-wise?
Out of love.
Oh, I see. Here, I think as a short introduction for the audience, it's we are in advantage because I also know the the Gerard, who is the partner of Anna, and we know each other also from the same town, which is in a story exactly. that maybe we will explain someday. So the movement to Switzerland was because Lukis Gerard was moving to Switzerland, and you decided just to quit the job in Barcelona and move there, or you were able to maintain job yeah. or
kind of. So when I came back from Brazil, I got kind of depressed because I moved back to my parents and it was, oh my God. Then I decided that I wanted to study something, to do something with my life. And I also decided that someday I would want to live abroad. Mm-hmm. Then I started learning German. Don't know why. I just wanted to learn. I discovered that learning Portuguese was so easy. My father speaks German because of his work. And then I said, why not? I'm going to study German. And I just studied German.
Sorry, but coming from Portuguese saying, oh, Portuguese is easy. Why not going for French or Italian? No, let's go for German, which is absolutely different.
That's me. Yeah, exactly. I wanted to try. I thought, why not? It sounds like why not? Mm. And I started. I really liked it. And I did 2 years of German in Barcelona. Then I was dating Gerard. And he told me, hey, Anna, I really, really want to do a PhD somewhere abroad. And he gave me a little bit options where we could go, and we studied like the situation. If I move here, are you going to come or not? What do you think? And I think stars and planets aligned, and he got the place in Zurich, and I already could speak German. And now at that moment, I knew what the Anna from 2 years before started learning German. So when he said I'm moving, then I said I'm coming, and then I quit the job. I was finishing something in Barcelona that took me a month more. Then I came a month later than Gerard. But he came here because of his PhD. He's studying a PhD. And I just said, okay, I will try to find a job. And if I don't find a job, then we will discuss about our relationship. But I found a job in 2 days. And actually finding an apartment.
And now you are married.
Exactly, with him. And actually, it was really, really, they already told us, but we never believed it's easier to find a job as a find an apartment. So finding the apartment was really, really difficult. And finding a job as an architect, let's say not everybody can get everything so easy, but as an architect in Switzerland, it's kind of easy, or it was. And yeah, then I just said, bye, and came here and started my Swiss life.
Nice. I mean, right now you're giving me a big relief, to be honest, because Anna is doing a lot of Insta stories, and you see her level of German, and I was like, what the fuck is happening? She came like more or less at the same time that I went to Germany, to Switzerland, and she's speaking this fucking German, and my German is a potato thing. Like, what the hell is going on? So yeah, now I see the advantage.
Yes, I have also to say that what it really makes a difference is work, and I work in German every day. And I noticed the difference also with Gerard. He just says, ein großes Bier bitte. That's Gerard's German. And I do speak every day, 9 hours a day in German. I do write emails. I do telephone. I mean, I think, yeah, okay, I came with a basis. I could speak German, but the German I could speak my first days was also potato.
And German, and not the dialect of Switzerland, which is another thing.
that's also a big thing, because they don't speak German here. Yeah, they do speak German, but they also speak Swiss German, and that's a mess. But Yeah, okay. For sure, it was nice to know a little bit of German. But I would say if you work in German, then you have it. And if you don't work in German, then yeah, you can do what as many courses as you want. But if you don't speak German every day, yeah, what do you want to do?
No, no. I mean, I completely agree. I know it from experience at the end. It's just like I've been now nearly 4 years working for German companies. But my day-to-day, it's in English. So at the end... What I'm supposed to do, you know, like I end speaking with Catherine's family because, yeah, I have the lack of having a German girlfriend who I can speak a little bit on a day base, even if we don't do it that much. But with the family, I really notice that I improve in mm-hmm. that sense. But if you only work in English, you're done.
Yeah. But that's the thing of big companies, I would say, because Gerard also is in the university, and university they speak English and everything's okay. But I do work in a small studio, and I mean, I just have to. I have no other option.
Yeah, definitely. So yeah, coming to Zurich, like, yeah. How is life in Zurich? Because we all have this kind of, like, say, stigma of Switzerland, of a lot of money, a lot of whatever it comes to financial, it's there, you know, like, but
yeah, they are rich.
They are rich. Okay.
They, not they. Us. They are rich. Yeah, Switzerland is, it's a nice country. I think when I was in Brazil thinking about Barcelona as, oh, in Barcelona, everything works so nice. And here, now I moved to Zurich and now I watch Barcelona. I look at Barcelona and I think, oh my God, why things don't work in Barcelona as they work in Zurich. I get a little bit Swiss, if I can say. And yeah, I don't know. Yeah, things are expensive here, but salaries are also high, and it kind of balances, and you end up having a nice quality of life level, because at the end, okay, things are expensive, but you are in the middle of Europe, so things that are kind of national is for everybody, because it makes no sense to sell something in Switzerland double the price that it costs in Germany, because then I would take a train and go buy it there.
Yeah. So which is happening in Luxembourg, but
and also here. It's happening also here, but that gives you, like, with a Swiss salary, you can buy things that other people from, maybe Germany is not the best example, but in Spain you would never think to buy. And yeah, you get a kind of quality of life, but really living here, like the apartment, renting an apartment, it's really expensive. Yeah, things are really expensive here, but if you can manage, yeah, you can save some money.
I kind of think that, I mean, I think Switzerland is a little bit higher than Germany when it comes to money or salaries wise, but I always say the same example when people, it's just asking me, hey, why Germany or whatever, it's at the end, like, cost in life when I was living in Frankfurt compared to Barcelona, rental and supermarket buys are exactly the same price, but my salary is 3 times more. So when it comes to this, yes, Switzerland is expensive when it comes to nearly daily products, let's say, like this, but if your salaries are compensating that, why not? You know?
Yeah. I also kind of say that, like, renting and rental and groceries and so on are like double the price, but your salary is normally 3 or 4 times your salary. So at the end, you end winning.
Yeah, makes a lot of sense. Other cultural shocks, that's one of the things that I really like to ask. I don't know. Can you think of a really, like, thing that you love from Zurich and a thing that you hate from Zurich?
Yes. The loving one, I'm really sure. One thing I really, really like from Zurich is that you have a river and a lake here in the city. And at the beginning, I was kind of, yeah, I'm from Barcelona. I really liked the sea. Having the sea next to me was kind of something important. But a lake is the same when it's a big lake. Mm-hmm. And we have beaches, a thing that I wasn't expecting from Zurich, to have beaches. And one thing I really, really like is that you can float on the river. And that's one thing we do a lot in summer. And I work, and then at 5 I just go off, I change my clothes, I have this this bag where you can put the things and yeah. You can put in the
waterproof thing, yeah
exactly, waterproof bags. So I put my things there and I just come from work to house floating in the river. I just don't need a bike or I don't need a bus. I can come home floating and I love
So wait a minute. Like, this is a concept. Like, I mean, I kind of seen your Instagram hundreds of times. You're just like getting into that river, whatever. But the concept of floating, like, you need something to float. I mean, our bodies doesn't float at itself. Like, or the current, the currents are.
Not so strong, and you can swim a little bit, and you cannot go against the, like,
so from home to work it's not possible, from work to home exactly. It's possible.
Exactly. Okay. There's just one direction. But if you can,
so it's quite of a thing, it's a problem, because you cannot go biking to work, yeah, and then go swimming, so you need, yeah, to
No, what I do is I go biking, I came home biking, and then I just let me float to another place and then come back with a bus or come back walking. And if you have this waterproof bag, it can also act like a little bit something to put yourself on it, and mm-hmm, and it helps to float. And there's a lot of people, actually, we do it like on weekdays to refresh ourselves after work in summer, mm-hmm, but you can also do it big. And we also have a boat. I never thought I was moving to Zurich and I would have a gummy boat, like a gummy boat is in German, but
the Zodiac style, like the exactly, inflatable one.
We do have this at home, and we can go on a 2 hours trip through the river till the next village, then we do barbecue, and then we come back with the train. And that's a thing that happens every day of summer in Zurich. It's really, really nice. And I'm really, really in love with it, because I was never expecting. And it kind of happens that in Barcelona, you have the beach, but it's not so accessible, I would say. No, not a lot of people go to the beach after working, like every day.
So you don't want to go to the beach of Barcelona in any case, yes, in general. So.
And I think the fact that here in Zurich everything is so clean, and actually that the water is not salty, that makes also like more of a refreshing feeling. And we also have all this infrastructure. There's what's called buddies. They're like some next to the river, you will have somewhere to change yourself, mm-hmm, some lockers, some toilets, and there's everything for free, and you can just use it. And it closes at 8 o'clock, and there's like some also some wards looking if one.
So that's nice. Kind of crazy. Like, so how many months of the year can you do that? Because
that's the worst thing of Zurich.
Okay, here we come. North Europe, here we come. Weather.
Yeah, exactly. Weather is the answer. Fucking weather is the answer. I would say you can start doing this in June.
Brave.
If you are crazy like I am, in April I'm jumping in the river, like just it's fucking cold, but just to feel that summer is coming. But yeah, I would say June, and then yeah, till September, it depends of the year, but I would say this. And my problem with Zurich, I would say weather, but not in terms of cold, because I get used to it. It's crazy how you can get used to cold. But for me, it's more the gray
sunlight.
Sky.
Sunlight.
I think from, it could be half of December, January, February, March, that you have like 2 weeks long gray sky, you cannot see the sun. And that turns me really, really sad and really, really crazy. But then you just have to learn from Swiss people, and Swiss people go to the mountains every time they can. And if you go up to a mountain, you will see the sun, because Zurich is in a valley, and we have the clouds here because it's a valley. But if you just go to the little mountain that we have next to Zurich, you can see the sun. So it's learning to be Swiss. It's every time you can, every weekend in winter, just go somewhere, do something. They like, they really like sport. They really like skiing. I do not ski, but I learned the last years. Yeah. Okay. Also, even if I don't like to ski, I just have to go up to the mountains and do something there, because sun is there and I need this vitamin. Yeah. So it's so like this.
Some kind of distraction that gets you warm. You arrive to an objective. Yeah. So it's kind of like hiking. It's a good idea, but gosh, you need to be fucking brave. I've lived in Germany, and not in the coldest part in Germany. So I've been in Frankfurt, which is kind of mild for German standards, let's say like this. Okay. And if you tell me in the middle of January or February, let's go hiking, yes, I will tell you, yes, jump into these two fingers and dance, you know, like what the fuck.
Yeah, for me, a little bit the problem is that we plan on go, there's this winter hiking that we do, like you can go on a ski resort and people can ski, but you can also walk there. They are really, really prepared for this, and they have really nice paths. But the problem is you have to get up really early. And when you get up, you see in Zurich, everything is gray, and I just have to close my eyes, don't think about it, put myself into the train, go up, took this chair leaf, took everything I can. And when I'm on the top, open my eyes and say, okay, now I'm here, now I'm sunny. And if it's just to go read, but you can go to a ski resort to read a book, it's okay. I do it. I mean, spa. You just see the sun. Yeah, yeah, exactly. It's the way to survive. Because if you keep being every weekend in Zurich, then you are going to be like 3 months seeing gray skies in a row, and you are going to be crazy. That's the thing.
Makes sense. So maybe next question that I wanted to ask you, it's perspective of life for now. Like, do you see how much long have you been in Zurich, Switzerland? Do you see yourself like staying for longer time in here? Do you have plans of going back to Barcelona? It's a kind of a standard thing. Sorry.
Third question.
Yes, but it's a kind of thing that it happens a lot. Like, everyone is asking you, why are you here? You come from Barcelona. Yeah. Why are you working here?
So now we are 4 years. We are starting our fifth year now. One thing I can easy answer is Gerard has to finish the PhD before we go back. So that's the easy answer. But I also want to say, like, it happens a lot. A lot of people ask you, what are you doing there? When are you coming back? I think your feelings kind of change, I would say, a lot. One day I loved Zurich and I think, oh my God, I want to be here forever. But then maybe some days I miss my friends, I miss the things, I miss my family, and then I think, oh my God, I have enough of this shitty sky. It's gray. We did have a plan. We said we were coming to do the PhD of Gerard, maybe post PhD, you can do like after some years. Yes. And we put like a minimum and a maximum of years, because we do want to come back one day to Barcelona, but we don't know when. Actually, my family did a bet that I would never come back.
Okay.
I don't know why my father thinks this. And what we think, because Gerard is also Catalan as me, so I think that also depends. When couples are international, it's another thing, but we do think that if we have children, we want them to feel at home. So we kind of said, okay, from the moment we can have a children abroad, but we want him to start primary school in Catalonia. Mm-hmm. So that gives you 6 years from the moment that I have the child. And yep. Now I'm not planning to have a child. So you can, it's a gap that can be 3 years more or 10 years more, I would say.
But I think it's a thought also in international couples. Like you're at the end and thinking, okay, if you want to have stability and you want to have like some kind of place that you feel home for the kid somehow, mm-hmm. meaning grandpas, meaning a lot of things at the end, it's thinking either in one place or the other, even for international people. So I think that makes a lot of sense. Yeah.
But I also want to say that I think it changes a lot. And I said, when we came, Gerardo got this PhD, so he got like friends or colleagues at the university, and I would say his life was easier at the beginning and my life was harder because I went to a new job and I was alone there just with my bosses. I didn't have colleagues, and my first year in Zurich was, I would say, hard. But with the time, things changed, and now I am on my source, if I can say this. Mm-hmm. I am speaking German. I'm starting to understand Swiss German. I have colleagues at work. I'm really, really into it. I feel really like living in Zurich. I'm on my days. And Gerard had, like, in the university, everybody went. Now he has all new colleagues. And he's in that moment that, I'm done with it. We have seen whole Switzerland. We have traveled a lot through the country. There's nothing more to see. Every mountain looks the same. And now we are in this moment that I would say, please keep being here, because now I'm a Swiss architect. Now I know the rules here. I know how to do the things here. And for me now, changing the place, it would be also a challenge. And now I am on this moment saying, no, please, please stay a little bit more. And he's saying, oh, no, I want to go back. So, yeah, maybe in 1 year it's, again, different. I don't know.
Let's see. I think we will hear that from Gerard. I hope he will also accept someday to come to the podcast and have the other perspective of Zurich somehow. We are nearly in 1 hour right now. So it has, yeah, it passed faster this time. I have like two normal questions that I suppose you already know as your listener of the podcast. First one, it's recommendation to anyone who wants to go abroad. I try to recommend like to people who are living actually in that moment into another country, if you can give a recommendation for the country itself, if not generic one, it's okay also.
Yeah, I think the first episode Carlotta said, find somebody to help you. I think that's one of the important things. But I would say for me in that case, the language was very important because of this Swiss German thing. So they don't expect from anybody to speak Swiss German, but if you come with German, then your point from getting really to know the Swiss people and to speak Swiss German, you don't need to speak it, you just need to understand it. And I think that would be for me I would say they all speak English and you can manage. You can live here just with English set. And in many companies, you don't need German. But if you really want to fit into the culture and make some friends, I think that it's really difficult with Swiss because they are closed. Then I would say coming with a decent level of German would help you be there. And and finding your community. And at the beginning, I thought I'm going to make a lot of Swiss friends. Then I said, oh, no, that's difficult. And then I just ended up looking for Catalan people. And that's nice also. It's okay. We help each other. I don't think we have to be like ashamed of this kind of ghettos that we kind of do. But the people that are going to help you is the people that live the same experience as you live. So I think they cannot really understand you. And Swiss people can be really, really nice, but they would never understand what's for you.
Oh, it makes a lot of sense. I mean, at the end, I think in every country, if you can find a little bit of home, that's always reconforting. Yeah. And I think from my perspective, when I was in Frankfurt, having Carlota, Juanca, some people from Catalonia, from Mallorca and everywhere was like feeling great, you know, speaking a little bit of Catalan.
Yeah, you are just not alone. Good. I think that's exactly. Really important to don't feel alone.
Yeah, I think you know the last question, and I don't know if you thought about it or not, but do you have any recommendations about yourself, about someone that you would like to promote that you think, yeah, it's a great thing to promote?
Yeah, because I want to become an Instagrammer. I will promote my Instagram because I want to leave. I want to quit architecture and leave from posting nice pictures and telling my life. No, that's a joke. So my Instagram would be Anna Mears. But one thing I can promote, if somebody is listening to this and is a Catalan person living in Switzerland, I am part of the Casal Català, who is an organization that actually was created many, many years ago with people that went in exile from Spain to Switzerland to kind of survive the civil war. And we are there. Now it's not so dramatic. Now we are just organizing some parties and meeting Catalan people and doing our traditions. And we are, kind of a family. And that's Casal Català de Zurich on Instagram, CZ Zurich. And it's a nice family that I have here.
Cool. That sounds lovely. So we would definitely put that into Instagram and the channel so people can check it out, especially people who is living in Zurich right now. Even if you are not Catalan, come on. Like if you would like to hear a little bit about our culture. Anna, it has been a really, really great pleasure drinking caipirinhas with you, coming from Brazil to Zurich, from the warm, not warm, to the cold, really cold.
drinking caipirinhas on a cold day in Zurich, that sounds exactly. Kind of my
that's,
life.
that's a really good plan. thanks again for this episode.
Thinking and me, it was also really nice. I was the whole week thinking about what would be interesting of my life, and now it's kind of interesting, I think.
Cool. So thanks a lot.
Thank you, and nice to see you after so many years.